Hi, welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Well, my guest this week firmly falls into the entrepreneurial category. He's smiling already, which is a good sign. Listen, I love chatting to people and really trying to understand their story. So we're going to speak to Reg Ricks, who is the co-founder and co-CEO, I believe, of Car Finance 247, because he's done this with his brother. And we're going to hear about his story and his passion and how he's built a company which started in 2012, now into present day with over 600 people. It's always about the people. Do not miss this episode. Come back to me straight after this.
During constant change, your leadership has never been more important to create a better and more inclusive world. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast for the insatiably curious to explore the power of human-centered leadership to create real momentum for positive and sustainable change. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors as we discover that success leaves clues. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
Well, there we go. How's that for an intro? Reg, this is an interesting one because you might fit into a number of those categories that we just heard in the intro, from entrepreneur to disruptor to all of those things. But listen, it's a big welcome to The Leadership Enigma.
Thank you, Adam.
So let's hear a little bit about your story, because I did a little bit of an intro myself there about you now being the co-CEO of Car Finance 247. But let's go back to those early days, because, you know, we'd had a chat before we went live. And the reality is, you've been working at this for a long time. So kind of take me back to where it started and you knew you wanted to be your own boss with your own business and enter into that enormous challenge.
It started when I left school, when I was 16. I got some decent GCSE results. I was always good at sport at school. And, you know, I could have quite easily gone on to A-levels. But my dad's always, I guess my dad was probably my inspiration.
Okay.
He's a workaholic. Right. Self-made workaholic. And, you know, I always sort of looked up to my old man. And it was quite simple, really. You know, it was either work in his business or set something up myself. Unfortunately, my dad was very good to me and backed us from an early age,
right,
and helped me set my first business up when I was 17. My dad's in the motor trade, so the idea was in 1999 to set up a car search to get dealerships advertising online.
Right.
And that's where it all started.
Wow.
It was quite difficult back then in the time because the internet wasn't as big as it was today.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, car dealerships didn't have websites. It was very much advertising in magazines, and I was sort of rolling around, repping, driving around the northwest of England, and you know, trying to get dealerships to advertise on the car search, so to speak. That didn't really work, to cut a long story short, after 3 years. And we then just fell into doing car finance online in around 2003-04.
Okay.
Because people were searching for cars, and then they just started sending email inquiries in saying, you know, I've seen this car on the website, do you do car finance? And Louis and I thought it'd be easier to try and make money out of doing car finance online and selling advertising space to car dealers. And that's how it first started. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, like I, you know, left school and thought, I know I'm going to go and do car finance online. I always knew I wanted to run my own business and do something like my dad. You know, and prove to myself that I could do something and be successful at something. But, you know, it's been a long 22 years. It's gone very quickly.
Yeah.
I'm 40 this year. I started when I was 17.
Now, you're a young man still, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Listen,
that's how it first started.
Okay. So many questions already, because I'm always fascinated by people's journeys. Let me go back to when you were 17. I want to dig a little deeper in relation to, what was it that made you passionate? How did you know that you wanted to do your own thing? Because as you say, your dad was an early investor, thankfully for you. But what was inside you telling you, no, I've got to do this myself? And maybe you've also talked about your brother as well. Is he older, younger, your brother?
Younger, 2 years younger.
2 years younger. Okay, so you're both at a very tender age at this point. What is driving you at that early age to say, I've got to do this myself? This needs to be me. Yeah, where's that coming from?
I guess it's just something with inside, you know, as I said, the option was, you know, what do you do when you leave school? You go and get a job, you want to earn money. I guess I wanted to earn money.
Yeah.
I actually left school for a short period of time playing football. And you know, as I said, I was okay at football. I was never going to make it to top level and any decent money. And I remember playing for a lower division side, and there was a professional footballer in the lower divisions that went back to being a postman,
right,
because he could earn more money. Right. And I just thought, this isn't for me. I'm not going to make any money out of this. So I knocked that on the head pretty quickly because I knew I wasn't good enough to make it and earn a decent living out of it. And then, so I guess I always wanted to start my own business. And I remember going into a NatWest Bank, a branch.
Yep.
And I got a starter pack on how to set up a business plan and a floppy disk to stick it into the computer.
Oh, floppy disk. You're taking me back now.
I know. And then, I put it in and put a simple business plan together to set up an internet company, a used car classified business, to try and get dealerships advertising on a subscription model. And I guess I was excited about making money.
Okay.
You know, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to get out there and make some money.
But you're still young at this point. So let me come back, because you also talked about your dad perhaps being a really positive and strong role model for you. Had you seen him succeed and thrive and overcome challenges where in some ways that was part and parcel of your DNA? Because you've talked about getting to bank, getting the floppy disk, doing the business plan. A lot of people just sometimes can't do that themselves. They haven't got it inside them. So is this your dad driving you, almost instinct, DNA?
Do you know, it's an interesting question. To have that confidence to be able to go out and do it, and that self-belief, I guess, in many ways. And I don't know where that comes from. I asked my mum, and me and my brother, I'm the eldest of six, actually.
Wow, okay.
And so it's Louis and I, and we were sort of left to our own devices because my mum was looking after the little ones. They were 4 or 5 years younger, and there was three of them very close together. So we were always, going all over the country playing football. We were quite independent. I guess that sort of independence and seeing my dad do his thing, he was never really around. He was always working. But we never went short. We were privileged.
Yeah.
But I guess it's just that desire and that hunger to go and get out there in that real world and do something. I guess that's where that hard work, really, that motivation to go out and be successful like my dad had been, really, in many ways.
Well, it's nice to hear about the role modelling and your mum and dad in your life as well. Listen, I think that's a massive impact for so many people. But as you say, you said you were grateful and you were privileged for it, but you still had this drive to do it yourself. Did Louis, your brother, also have that? Or were you initially the driving force as the older brother? Or were you both in some ways the same? Like, you both wanted this kind of thing.
Yeah, no, we're very different. I'm very much the sort of visionary, this is what we're doing, this is where we're going.
Yeah.
And Louis sort of makes things happen in the background more operationally. And we work well together. We're brothers. We've never really fallen out. We're pretty direct with each other if we don't agree on something. But, a lot of people say, well, how do you work with your brother? How do you work with family? We're close. There's a strong bond there. We're not necessarily close outside of work, but inside of work, we want the same things. We want what's best for the business. And I think running a business can be a lonely place. I often speak to a lot of entrepreneurs that you're by yourself. You've not really got anyone you can turn to, and then you need that support network and all that type of thing. And lots of people always say, I wish I was in business with my brother. That must be pretty cool, right? I've never really looked at it like that, but I guess there's always someone there. And when you're in those low times, those difficult times, and you're in those moments, you're in it together, I remember being, we in 2008-09, we had to put our business into administration. That was a very difficult time with the credit crunch.
Yeah.
And, I never forget, we were in the car outside of his house and we were having a chat about how much we owed to the tax man and what we're going to do and how it worked. And those are low times, but we were there together.
Okay.
And you never forget those times. And equally, when it becomes good, you enjoy the success together too. You enjoy the highs and lows. So I guess that's been one of the most positive things. And there's that trust there as well that you can't underestimate that.
I mean, the credit crunch was difficult for so many people at a variety of levels. Mm-hmm. You said you had to go into administration. Where's that resilience coming from? Because when we talk to entrepreneurs, self-starters, one of the things, when times are good, it's great. But let's be honest, the world is constantly changing, so today's as simple as it gets. Where are you finding that resilience to push through that kind of challenge, that kind of adversity, that kind of disappointment?
In our business today, we have DNA, what we call our DNA, like our values, our high level values. And one of them is bold and resilient.
Okay.
And resilient is absolutely necessary, I think, for any entrepreneur. You know, you've got to keep on going and never give up. I think a lot of people give it too easily. But I guess in many ways, I've always wanted to be successful. And I probably when I started, and even when we weren't successful, I felt successful. I could see it.
Okay.
You with me?
Yeah.
I always felt like I was going to be successful. Do you know what I mean? Even though I wasn't there and I hadn't.
So that self-belief.
Made it. I knew it was going to happen. You with me?
Yeah.
And even though I wasn't on paper and it wasn't really happening, I had that self-belief. Do you know what? If I keep on going, if I keep on persevering, it's going to happen.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, you said you're about to turn 40 soon, which makes you mm-hmm. young, by the way. Yes. And you've got this business, which you battled through and you've built with your brother. Over 600 people now you employ. Do you consider yourself successful? Or are you still looking for something or striving for something?
Both of those things.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more.
On reflection, yes, of course. I mean, you know, I don't often stop and reflect. But if and when I do, we've got ourselves in an incredible position.
Yeah.
Whether that's, but that's, you know, you make your own luck by working hard and persevering and sticking at it.
Agreed.
You know, I've always had two businesses, a car search and a car finance brokerage. They both failed the first time round.
Right.
It failed. So the car search failed. The car finance brokerage failed. Credit crunch.
Yep.
We then did the car search again. We raised some investment in 2010 off David Crossland, who was the founder of Airtos. He invested £2 million in our business. The long story short, that business was sold to the RAC 3 years later.
Right.
It wasn't a huge success, but it looked good on paper. We didn't have lots of money, but we learned an awful lot on how to run a business because David had founded a very, very successful listed business and is a very successful entrepreneur. And we learned an awful lot on that journey. But we didn't come out of that with, you know, we hadn't made a loan of money. It was a business breaking even. The RAC bought it. We got out of that lucky, really, in many ways. And then we've got to where we were today. But we've glued those two businesses together. So you've got the car search today. We've got a car finance brokerage. People come to get a loan to get the best rate to choose a car. So I've sort of put the two businesses together.
Okay.
It's ironic. They've been separate businesses, but we've put them together. So you just keep on going and changing and adapting and evolving. And then before you know it, you've got this business that when you stop and look back and think, well, it started in 2012 with 10 people, then it's grown into what it is today. But it's only how it is today because of the experiences and the things that we've learned along the way, really, in many ways. It's a success. There's no doubt about it. I mean,
but you know. I'm intrigued as that there's a personal quest as well, isn't it? As you say, when you were younger, you wanted to make money, but there's also an element of, who are you as a leader and what is it you're trying to, where are you trying to arrive at? Because I speak to a lot of people when I'm saying, at what point do you know that you've won, that you've actually achieved what you wanted to achieve? Because you can just keep going and keep going and keep going and never be fulfilled. I think that's the piece. And as we're chatting, you know, you're humble in how you're describing it, but what is perhaps fulfilling you the most now in 2022, when you think of what you've been through over the last 22 odd years in battling through, what kind of gives you that warm and fuzzy feeling the most?
Watching people succeed along the way within the business. We have some very proud people within our organization who are very passionate about what they're doing. You know, I enjoy my work. I love my work. I love what I do.
Okay.
And, you know, I think that's a part of that is working with great people that I like working with. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning. We have a fantastic business that's making lots of money. But, you know, if we were to shut up shop today and sell up, I probably wouldn't be fulfilled because the business isn't where I want it to be. It's still quite clunky. It's not very efficient. In many ways, we're just, even though we're 10 years in, it feels like we're just starting out, but we're in a great space because we've got a marketplace business. We're online. We're digital.
Yeah.
We're addressing a huge market in used cars and online finance. I mean, online finance in the UK is worth 42 billion per annum. There are 8 million used cars sold each year, and we're digitizing that. And I guess in many years, if I can look back in 5 or 6 years and say, that's a nice business. It works well. It's digitized. It's pretty efficient. I can't really improve it anymore.
Right.
it's probably as good as it's going to be type of thing. You know, you're making marginal gains. We're making sweeping changes to our business at the moment, big changes. So there's still a long way to go. So it's not finished. It's not finished business. But once I think I've got it to where I want it to be in 3 to 5 years, we're just putting the piece of the jigsaw together. I don't know. Then I'm thinking, what do I do then? You know, what I'm thinking, well, I understand what the next 3 years is, the next 5 years. But then I'm thinking, do I take my, once I've got my model and I understand what it is, do I take it to a different territory? Do I take it into Europe? Do I take it into the States? What does that mean for me personally?
Yep.
So, you know, as you said, I'm only young. Thank you. and we've got the world at our feet, you know, really. And that's what gets me out of bed in the morning, driving to you know, I mean, we have over 100,000 people that apply for finance every month on our website. And they can't really do much at the moment. They can't quote themselves. They can find a car and book a call. That's probably about it. But if we can digitize that used car buying journey, it's phenomenal. And that's the exciting thing. And I mean, I guess that's only just come about with this digitization, with COVID, with people working from home, you know, and even you doing what you're doing here. Perhaps if it wasn't for COVID, we might not be having this conversation.
I agree.
You know, things have just moved forward so much. You know, you've got huge players like Cazoo and Cint raising hundreds of millions, billions of pounds.
They're all over the TV, aren't they?
Exactly. So it's just such an exciting space to be in, but there's a lot more work to do. So, yeah, I mean, and listen, I don't know. Success just isn't about money, isn't it? So I think it's about looking back and, you know, what you've built and what it's doing. And
that's what I'm hearing, Rach. That in some ways, that's what I'm hearing. You know, you talked about when you were 17, you wanted to make money. Maybe that was the driver. And I get it as a young teenager. But as you've been, you know, we haven't met before. So I'm enjoying this conversation because it's bold of me to suggest that you sound very people oriented. And just before we started the recording as well, we talked about that. And I know I read one article that said you really are helping people who can't get credit, really assisting those who maybe find it difficult for health reasons or things of that nature. And so the thing with that is you're very people oriented, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we try and help people improve their everyday lives. That's you know, what we try and do within our business, whether that's internally or externally. You know, we help people throughout the spectrum. You know, whether people have good credit or bad credit, it's full spectrum with what we do. But you know, a car is very important to people, and you know, some people just see it as, you know, getting from A to B, whereas some people really enjoy the process of buying a car. But, you know, we speak to so many customers that, you know, have children or have an elderly parent and they need to get them to hospital and they can't do it without their mobility. In some instances, they can't get the loan they need to buy the car. And that's where we come in and we try and help them or just try and, you know, remove the awkwardness out of buying a car. A lot of people feel very anxious about it and we're there to help. And that's what we do. You know, so we very much try and do that, but it's very much about people. You know, I talk about digitizing the business. I'm not suggesting any stretch of imagination. We don't want to employ people and it's all digital online. Far from it. We just want to improve what we do, improve our systems. So should people want to not interact with anyone through voice, but do it digitally, then they can do. But people are buying cars and they're taking finance. It's the second biggest purchase of their life, probably, you know? So they do want that reassurance. Is it a good car? Is it a good deal? Can I speak to you? You know, so people are the biggest part of our business. And I'll tell you this, when COVID struck in March of 2020, it's February, March, wasn't it? When we got that message from Boris. I remember going into the office the following week. We have 40,000 square feet. We have two floors, 2.5 floors.
Yeah, I saw that. Huge office space.
Yeah, huge. And on our sales floor, we've got a 16,000 feet open plan office, 220 seats. And it's absolutely buzzing. It's buzzing now. Everyone's back at work, apart from the techies that work from home. Right. I just went in. Yeah, I just went in the following week and there was no one in the office and it felt soulless. There was just wires and computers and chairs strewn everywhere. It was like, you know, a nuclear bomb had gone off. It was awful. And it just made me think that, wow, you know, really we're an online brokerage, but really you just look around there and you can't see anything apart from computers and wires and screens. And it really is the people that make the difference. in our business. And that hit me quite hard, actually, to be quite frank. I'll never forget that. It was surreal.
It's funny that you, well, not funny that you mentioned that, because as we were chatting earlier, I actually wrote down a potential title for this episode, and it says, "It's All About the People." Because I think that was coming out loud and clear just in the first few minutes when you and I connected and chatted. So I want to talk a little bit about culture, because that is obviously incredibly important for any business. That is incredibly important to you. And I'm interested about how this culture has grown, because in some ways that culture has probably got to be a little bit about you and Louis, hasn't it? It's grown up in some ways or started. Tell me a little bit about the culture of the business that you're working very hard to create. So you've got that buzz.
Yeah. And that's what it is. And culture is a funny thing. It's you can't touch it. You can feel it. You can't actually see it. And when you're starting a business, I mean, for the first 4 or 5 years, I didn't really know what culture was. I didn't know it was a thing. I just thought it was like words you put on a wall.
Right. You learn the hard way.
Well, it's a funny thing, really. And, you know, when you're starting a business, you know, the first thing you've got to do is to have a business, and you know that you're getting more income than costs and outgoing. You've got to make money. You've got to have a business.
Sustainable.
And then you can start. Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got to have a real business, and that, you know, once you've got a business, you can then start, you know, and you start building a business, and it becomes like the people and the culture and everything else. It's really, really important. But it does come from the top. It absolutely comes from the top. And you have to lead by example, and you have to make sure that the leaders in your business are leading by example. And the way you do that is by holding people to account,
right,
on the behaviors and attitudes that you're looking for. But you have to live and breathe it, and it's in everything you do. So our DNA is bold and resilient, proud and passionate, and togetherness. Okay. You know, so we're very collaborative, and people ban this word around culture, and it's frustrating me from time to time, because I think, you know, people say they've got a culture and this is what it is. I mean, I hear entrepreneurs talking about culture all the time, and I have an insight into their businesses, and what they're saying and what I'm hearing, there are two completely different things. You know, so you do have to work really, really hard on it and take it seriously. So, you know, we have a set of behaviors. So, you know, bold and resilient. Well, how do I be bold and resilient, you know,
togetherness? Yeah. How do I live it? How do I work for you? That's the question, right? How do I live that?
How do I do that?
Yeah.
Proud and passionate. How do I do that? Well, number one, you have to be an owner. We want everyone to be an owner.
Okay.
And there are lots of other examples. And what we do, we try and recruit based on our values, our behaviors. We onboard based on our values. We're very big on that through the onboarding process. And we try and we lead in that way, and we manage in that way. Performance management is very, very important.
Okay.
You know, we ask people, whether it's monthly or quarterly, to demonstrate how they have or provide clear examples of, you know, how they have lived and breathed our values. And you know, we build that into reward and recognition. We recognize people based on those, and whether it's, you know, monthly or whether it's annual awards, but you know, they're just within you. And you know, I would say for businesses out there that haven't done that piece of work, you know, it's there. You just need to bottle it up, because if you don't bottle it up and put it into words and then use it, and then it takes years, you know, to change a culture. But it takes, you know, you've really got to sit down and think, who are we? What are we about? You know, bold and resilient. I'm pretty direct. I wear my heart on my sleeve. What you see is what you get. If I'm not happy with you, it'll be written all over my face, and I'll tell you why. You know, that's just how it is. And you know, we have a meeting. We talk about things. We're direct. We're pretty harsh in there. But it is what it is. Business isn't personal. When we make decisions. You know, you talk about being proud and passionate. You know, I could speak to my sales director, and we can have a debate about something, and either he'll put me straight or I'll put him straight. But we'll walk out of that room, and it's as if nothing's happened, because...
Positive intent.
It's positive intent, but the higher power is the business, right? It's not about me or the it's about the business. What is best for the business? You know, you talk about decision-making. You know, great leaders and great organizations have got to be willing to make difficult decisions for the best of the business with the information that they've got. And... you know, that's what we try and do.
I know you've recruited many, many people, you know, into three figures for the business when you went through rapid growth. How has the culture that you've created and you're proud of guided you in relation to how you're recruiting? How have those two things matched up? Because one of the challenges for leaders is not to sometimes recruit in our own image. and get that diversity of thought and that inclusivity. So how have you married up finding an eclectic and diverse workforce, but also having the culture guide you in relation to who's going to fit in?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I mean, you know, don't forget when we started in 2012 with, say, 10 people.
Yeah.
you know, one of those individuals, in fact, the two or three, there's Louis and I, and three other people that have sort of grown the business
from scratch
over the past 10 years, really.
Yeah.
And then as I'm talking senior leadership directors, and then over the past couple of years, you know, we've had more people come in, people from more corporate backgrounds that have worked in SMEs. So I think that's very important too, especially as your business grows, because you do need those, you know, you can't all be like Reg and Louis and worked in an SME business, because, you know, I've never worked in a bank or a huge corporate organization.
You brought a CIO in as well, didn't you, Reg?
Yeah, we've got a CTO, we've got a CFO, whose background is from the Co-op and Barclays and HSB. We've got a CFO who's come from Aldermore. And these different types of people that with more experience with that corporate background that can adapt to working in a fast-paced sort of SME, I think that really helps build a solid team. But, you know, I mean, I did a lot of the recruitment in the early days, and some of those people that have risen up through the ranks are those people that, you know, they always say cream rises to the top. You know, they come in as a salesperson. They don't always make the grade, of course. Then they become a manager. Then, you know, one of them is our sales director today came in as a salesperson.
Right.
You know, and, you know, he's very much on a journey. And we're supporting him on that journey to develop him, because I think that's important too. But then equally, there are others that have fallen by the wayside that, you know, have reached ceilings, have been elevated into roles that, you know, for whatever reason, they've not been able to flourish or succeed.
Yeah.
But it's difficult. It's difficult. People's the most difficult thing, and trying to get it right. And you don't always get it right. But one of the things I am doing now is really strengthening my senior leadership team. We've had a few resignations. So, as I said earlier, the two or three directors that helped grow the business, two of those have now left the business. Right. And they were probably too stretched in the organization. They had too much responsibility. And sometimes when they have too much responsibility, they come ineffective. And they start dropping the ball in certain areas. And one of the things I've done now is I've really taken a step back, and I thought, you know, it's really made me think, well, had they not handed their notice in, would I be bringing two or three other great people with different experiences into my business?
The ebb and flow of business, right?
Exactly. And the answer to that is no. You know, so one of the things I have learned recently is, you know, you should always be looking to strengthen your senior leadership team. And you should always be thinking 12, 24 months ahead. And I haven't been doing that, but recently I've had to, and I'm interviewing some fantastic people with great experience that are going to really put the standards in great shape moving forward, you know. So, but again, culturally aligned.
Yeah.
And it becomes really obvious, are they going to fit? And there's a funny old thing called the beer test.
Right.
And once someone always said to me, you know, do they pass the beer test? Would I go for a beer with that person? Would I have a drink with them? And if the answer is no, then they're probably not going to work in your organization, because, you know, we spend so much time at work. You've got to enjoy the people you work with. Yes, it doesn't mean they're the same as you. They can be very different. In fact, they can be more reserved. They can be more reflective, you know, not quite as, you know, let's do this, let's do that, impulsive, or whatever the case may be. You know, so those differences are very important. You know, you do need that yin and yang, but at the same time, they've got to fit in your organization. Fit is the most important thing for me, and that's culture. Did they fit? You know, do we get on with them? Did it get who we are? Are they, you know, are they on our wavelength? And that's very, very important.
Or can they actually live and breathe it on a day-to-day basis? And still have that diversity of thought, because that's so important. And also the courage, I'm hearing, Reg, to actually recruit people who are better than you. In certain areas, you want people who are way better than you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Operationally, in finance. I mean, you know, our finance team, I always say to our CFO, we've got the most expensive finance team in Manchester. Right. We always have a little laugh. But, you know, great people that have worked at top four firms.
Okay.
And, you know, if you build a great team, then, you know, I mean, our CFO, he's taking more responsibility now. He's running different areas of the business because his team are so capable.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've said to the senior leadership team, in our last ExCo meeting, you know, they've all got their 3-year plan. We know what we're doing. We know what we've got to do, and it's all there to go and do. But I've said, you know, you've got to make sure you've got a solid team. You can't do it all yourself. You're going to have to delegate. So those people have got to be capable to deliver for you. Because if they don't, they're letting you down and letting the business down. Just back onto culture as well. The biggest thing for me is togetherness and collaboration.
Okay.
Now, I mean, you might think, you know, Reg Ricks, CEO, Louis Ricks, you know, CEO, you know, it's what we think. And then ultimately we make the decisions, right? But I always find that the trick is to get the best outcome is to get not too many people, but three or four of the right people in the room and have a proper debate. And you always, always come out with the desired outcome, the best outcome. It's like, you know, when you sat down by yourself and you're thinking, well, you know, what we're going to talk about, what we're going to do. You'll find if you have a conversation with someone, it just sparks off that creative, oh yeah, this, that. And before you know it, you've got a page full of notes. And I quite often see people that want to come in and, oh, I'm not going to tell Reg that. You know, that's on a need-to-know basis.
Right.
But, you know, I it's really important I deliver this. If I go and ask for help, maybe that's seen as a sign of weakness. And it's nonsense, you know. So maybe that's what it is in some businesses, in bigger corporate businesses, because, that, you know, if you ask for help, that's seen as a sign of weakness. But we very much collaborate, and that's what we try and instill throughout our business. What's the problem we're trying to solve? Who are the people we need in the room? And then we come up with a clear plan and everyone knows what they're doing. And togetherness is a big thing as part of our DNA. It's very important.
Listen, you're a straight-talking Manchester lad. I'm going to ask you whether you're blue or red in a moment. But, well, you know, with that, have you got a culture where actually anyone can grab hold of you and have a candid conversation and with a bit of a feedback culture or, you know, an environment, yeah, where people feel as if they can have robust conversations in order to assist the business?
Yes, very much so. I mean, it is more difficult. I mean, is someone on the shop floor going to walk up to me and have a conversation with me? No, not always. But do I have an office? No. Am I on my laptop behind a computer all day? No, I'm up, I'm about, I'm walking around, laughing, having a laugh and a joke with people.
Yeah.
And just generally getting a feel for my business. That's why I like being in the office. But no, it's very much open door policy. People come and, you know, we're there. You know, we're not on the golf course. We're not on holiday all the time. We're working. We're
one
working
day.
Hard.
One yeah. day you can do that, right?
Not well, yet. One day. Yeah, but that's part of it, right? That's the journey we're on. You know, we've got a lot of work to do. It's, you know, it's a 3 to 5 year plan and people are very engaged. And guess what? Reg and Louis are there. They're in the trenches with us. So, of course, yes, it's very much open door. You know, come and have a chat with us. But there again, you know, I can be quite office and I can be in the lift with somebody going down from the sixth floor to the ground floor, and I'll be saying, oh, you know, they've got the car finance lanyard on.
Yeah.
And I haven't, not leaning by example. And they'll say, oh, I'll say, have you just started? You know, what? Because of COVID, you've not been in office for 2 years.
Of course,
I'm not close to the recruitment anymore. People, you know, say, how are you getting on? How long have you been with us? Oh, yeah, I've been here 3 months. Oh, great. Which team do you work on? And I go, you know, occasionally, it doesn't always happen. Oh, which team do you work on? I'm like, I'm the owner of the business. You know, so it's, you know, it's not like, you know, we're not, it's, I'm not in everybody's face type of thing.
Well,
but I'm
too
there.
Many people, right?
I'm present. It's occasionally funny when that happens. Yeah.
How was the pandemic for you, Reg? Because listen, you are thriving off of people, the energy of people being together. I'm assuming you're a bit of an extrovert as well. How was the pandemic for you? Because I certainly didn't enjoy it, but you know, how did you cope and pull the business through the other side?
Well, it was an unknown, wasn't it? I think we're all in the same boat, the country, the world. It was difficult. I mean, no one knew what was going to happen or for how long or what the case was going to be.
Yeah.
But we acted quickly. I mean, you know, we make decisions quickly, whether the right decisions or wrong decisions, time will tell. But one thing we don't do is hang about.
You have to make a decision. That's the point.
Yeah, indecision is the worst thing. You know, you got to make a decision, you know. And we do that quite quickly. And listen, I mean, it's been a tragedy globally, a pandemic. Lots of people obviously lost their lives. It's been very, very difficult for a lot of people. But from a business perspective, it is a cliche. But it's really allowed us to take a step back and have a look at the business. And I think the biggest thing we've done is assess people's roles. We actually shut down for a month, Adam. We decided in April, after that March lockdown, we're just going to close the business down for 1 month.
Okay.
And then we opened back in May, and then we built the business on new footings, really, in many ways. which was interesting, exciting, challenging. But the biggest thing we've done is sort of rebuild our tech platform, you know, because we had this sort of monolithic database, lots of technical debt. And because the business was moving so fast, you get stuck in a rut and you don't challenge, tackle these big issues. And we managed to really pull apart our tech platform and really start to sort of rebuild it and get it in a much better shape. And we're starting to see the benefits of that now.
Let me ask, I've got to go backwards. Because you just said something and it's really tweaked my interest. You said you shut the whole business down for a month. Now, putting revenue to one side, how was that for you and people? Did it decompress? Did it just give a gap where you could in some ways draw a line under one chapter and start a new chapter? What did that do for you? And I'm not talking about revenue.
Well, actually, the reason we shut the business down was because our sales director, Steve, was very poorly. And he went into a coma for 4 weeks and was given a 5% chance of living. So out of respect, out of respect for Steve, we decided to close the business. That's what the decision was born out of.
Oh, okay.
Steve pulled through and he's now fine. He's now thriving. It took him 12 months to recover.
Wow.
But it was scary because that was like a week into it. I thought, my God, if that's happened to Steve, what's going to happen? It was absolutely frightening.
And that was COVID related, was it?
And that was COVID related. Wow, yeah. Scary. That was COVID related. It's frightening. So we just thought, you know, do you know what? Let's just shut the business down and let's just reassess. Fortunately, I mean, the government, I think the government have been superb throughout this with furlough. I mean,
that saved a lot of businesses, didn't it?
So quickly. I mean, we were going to let 150 people go on that Wednesday before they mentioned the furlough on the Friday.
Wow.
And then we brought all of those people back because we only had a certain amount of cash that was going to last us for so long. We probably had 12 months worth of cash, you know, to sustain, you know, I don't know, we might have 5 or 6 million quid, but we probably burned 500 grand a month just by standing still. So, you know, we had 12 months. So, you know, furloughs really saved the economy in many ways. And that made it much easier to make that decision. And I think people felt comfortable because they were getting the support and the backing from the businesses and getting that backing from the government. And then that filters down to the people. It just, you know, just alleviated so much pressure. And then, of course, you know, people couldn't do anything. They couldn't spend their money. They weren't being paid. And they couldn't go on holiday, can't go to restaurants. And the only thing they could do really was buy cars and buy clothes online, really. And, you know, so we rapidly came, when we started up the business again in May, we built up quite quickly. And probably within 6 months, nobody was on furlough. We may have used it again in the December lockdown this year, but from January, February last year, We came out of it. We've been very, very busy, actually.
Do you know what, Reg? I'm glad we've had this conversation. In some cases, I've just stumbled upon what you just told us. I think people will be listening to this and it will be kind of resonating with them that you had a senior member of staff who was very poorly off the back of COVID and you shut down completely a 650-strong business for an entire month.
Yes.
That says a lot about you and the culture of the business in relation to the human-centered element of you. And I don't know whether you've actually ever reflected on that. You know, have you ever paused and thought, what was that about? And what does that say of you as a leader? Because as I hear that story, I'm passionate about human-centered leadership. I mean, that's an incredible example of a human-centered leader putting an individual ahead of an entire business. I find that's an extraordinary, what you've just told me was extraordinary, but that wouldn't have even come out, Reg, had I not in some ways landed on it by chance.
No, I hadn't thought about it that way in many ways. It just felt like the right thing to do at the time, Adam.
That's incredible because think of the impact that I would have had of all those 650 people. And I'm also delighted to hear that I think you said Steve is okay.
Yeah, Steve, well now.
And it really did. It in some ways, it got us to all reassess everything. And you as an entrepreneurial CEO, in some ways, I bet it questioned everything you might have believed in, your value proposition. What were you doing? How were you doing it? What did the future look like? I bet you had some pretty seismic questions whizzing around.
Exactly. And one of the things that come out the back of that. So we have two businesses, Adam. We have a group and the business we're talking about, the big, you know, the one that everybody really knows is the brokerage Car Finance 24/7.
Yeah.
But we also have a lending business in group and we create and develop products to put on our own lending panel. So, you know, we have to be competitive. It's all best rate.
Yeah.
But 1 in 3 loans we do through the brokerage is actually on our own balance sheet within our own lending business.
Right.
And what, I mean, this is back to revenue, but this was an observation that we made at the time. As a broker, you're only as good as your last month. you write your business and then you get commission and that comes in the following month. But if you shut the business down, then you don't do any deals.
It stops
and you get no revenue. But we had a lending business with a back book with annuity income, and that business made money. And people were continuing to make their payments. So thinking, hang about, I've got a brokerage, which is the cash cow and the main business, and that's just lost X hundred thousand pounds by standing still.
Yeah.
And I've got this business over here, which has just made money. I'm thinking, we need to do more of that. We need to accelerate that. And off the back of that, we set about reshaping our funding strategy. And this is public knowledge, it's written about. And I think we had an 80 million facility at the time for lending, and we managed to. Right. We thought, you know what, we're going to accelerate our lending business. And within 12 months, we managed to secure a funding package of 305 million. But that was off the back of that decision to accelerate it. And that was one of the big things that came out of it.
See, that's incredible as well, isn't it? Do you think that month you shut down gave you a period of stillness?
Yes.
To actually think and reflect, and maybe see the business in a way you'd never have seen it, Reg, had you been going 24/7.
Well, yeah, because the obvious thing to do is what we'll do, we'll scale down, skeleton staff, and we'll stress ourselves out on a call at 9 o'clock every day.
Yeah.
What are we doing today? What was yesterday like? And who wants to be on one of them calls every single day? Let's just shut it down and let's not have that call. Because do you know what? You know, whichever way you look at it, we're going to lose money. So let's just draw a line under it and knock it on the head, because there's no point, and it's just stressing everyone out. It was really hot that year as well. It was hot, wasn't it?
It was. Remember, in April, it was an unbelievable weather and summer that we had.
Yeah, so it just felt nice not to have to be on like a conference call every day, freaking out about what's happening and what's going on, and you know, because. To the back end of that month before we shut down, you know, we had customers applying for loans online, and the finance companies were still operating, and they were still open, and they're saying, you know, here's your loans. But, you know, we can't really operate without the car dealers. But then, of course, we're ringing car dealers. Hey, we've got a customer that wants to buy a car. Can he come and see it? And then some of the car dealers like, what are you on about? Can he come and see it? What do you mean? It's we're in a lockdown. No, they can't come and see it. And then we had like, morally, it just wasn't, right.
Yeah.
It just wasn't right.
Yeah.
But that stillness of not being on a call, shutting the business down, makes you think, do you know what? We spend 20 million quid a year on advertising and we don't have a marketing manager. How much more effective could that be?
Yeah, right. That's right. Look, those eureka moments when the penny drops at the.
Right. So our old sort of head of product is now our chief marketing officer. And with the focus over the last 2 years on that spend, it's just been insane what we've been able to achieve. So we've pretty much reshaped the business, put people in the right places, put the business back together.
Yeah.
And as I said, you know, being able to digitize our business now, we're just about to go on that journey of that online digitization. But there's probably 2 years' work before you can even begin to think about doing that. And that's what we did, really. And we made 3 or 4 fundamental decisions, but it's that stillness. Because I speak to a lot of people, and then we carried on going. People work from home, we just muddled through it.
Yeah.
But that was the best thing we did, shutting down.
It's amazing, isn't it? I think there are so many lessons that are dropping out of this conversation. And in some ways, we may have gone in a direction you hadn't expected at the start, as you told the story, which I hope has been useful. Let me ask you an unfair question. Is there anything that springs to your mind, Reg, that was a really impactful piece of leadership advice that you found yourself giving someone or receiving from someone that really sticks in your mind maybe over the last few years? Anything that just kind of floats to the surface?
What I say to people joining the organization is make an impact quickly.
Okay.
Make a decision. I say to people when you come in, you know, don't just go making sweeping changes, but within a 90-day period, make a quick impact. You know, empower yourself and make decisions.
Is that the footballer in you, Reg, there? Making an impact, getting on the pitch and making an impact?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. I see so many people frightened to make decisions, frightened to change, and that doesn't work. I like it when people come in. You know, they've got to do it in the right way. Culturally, of course they have come in, get to know the people, get to understand how they're working. But then, you know, put 2 or 3 quick wins in. Gotcha. Make a positive impact. That's what I like to see.
If people want to find out a little bit more about Car Finance or even avail themselves to the services you have, what's the best place for them to head to?
Yeah, just go to the website, carfinance247.co.uk,
okay.
And make an application for finance as and when you're ready to buy a car. We, you know, we work on best rate basis with okay. rates as low as 6.9 APR all the way up to 39.9 APR to help people that, you know, may have had difficulties getting credit in the past.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, so it's full spectrum.
carfinance247.co.uk. All right, great. Listen, Reg, you've been an absolute star for just having the conversation on the Leadership Enigma. I hope it's been useful to you, and I hope you'll come back to us and tell us a little bit more about the story and where you are. Well, I know you've got that plan, haven't you, till 2025, so I hope that you're on course for that. But you've been a star. Thanks very much for joining the Leadership Enigma.
Thank you, Adam.
Join us again next week for more tips and strategies on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or our YouTube channel. And remember to get your daily learning to build success at www.insights.emeritus.org. Download the Insights app and start learning for free. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.